Like,
I don't understand why you have to dig so deep into it.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Monster Day Podcast. I believe this is 188. I think
189.
Ooh, 189. I'm one behind. I'm behind the times.
When you get to that many, it's after a while easy to lose track.
I agree. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing all right, sir. It's as always great to be here with you.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's just the latest ravings and madness.
Yeah. Well, in one land. We might as well. Well, before we get into it, as always, head over to mondstate.com for more op-ed and opinion pieces. And, you know, obviously tune into the podcast wherever you're tuning into. If you can go to iTunes, leave us a review, that's great. But and either way, just keep listening to wherever you're listening at. So, so actually the topic tonight, and we've talked about this a couple times, but I think...
Keep having to, sadly.
Unfortunately. And actually in my backyard, probably just a 45-minute drive down the road, there was a high school shooting. And not to be overshadowed.
What is it with Colorado? Y'all had a string of them.
Yeah, well, actually what just happened recently was on the anniversary of Columbine, there was a like 18-year-old girl that flew in from Florida. Yeah, super disturbed. Flew in from Florida and like bought a shotgun, walked out the door with it, and like literally... all of the schools in the Denver area and surrounding areas went on lockdown, and they finally found her up in Evergreen, just in the sort of foothills in the mountains, and she wound up committing suicide. But so that happened, and then sadly
that was probably the best possible resolution to that, as dark as that is for me to say. You gotta admit that thought occurred to you when you read that headline.
Well, it wasn't.
It was a thank God moment.
You know, it kind of happened. It kind of happened. You know, I was at work, so everyone's watching TV, and it sort of happened, and everyone was like, "Well, yeah, that, you know, that's I guess better than what could have happened." And you know,
well, I guess that just solidifies for everybody listening that already thinks this, that people that, you know, through the years that already think this, cements my status as a bad person, okay? But my initial reaction was,
well,
okay, better her than 12 mm-hmm. innocent people that this loon went in and blew their brains out. I mean, yeah. I'm not saying I'm happy she died.
Well, it gets
my first thought was, thank God it was her.
Yeah, it gets into the point of the equal opposite reaction that I think I'll make the argument for tonight. But, you know, I will I will say that this area, at least Denver, has been riddled with this ridiculousness, both with the Aurora Theater, which is right down the road from me, relatively speaking.
You know, it's become a theater almost in a broader sense, hasn't it?
Yeah. And I think this area specifically where I live, takes this pretty seriously. And as it happens more, it's just, it hits the community similar, but it's sad to say that a lot of people are veterans of this.
Let me ask you a question, and I don't mean this to be trite. I'm actually, for once, normally when I have a backhanded or backdoor reference to sex on this show, it's me being snarky. I'm trolling, folks. I'm not being serious. As Senator Graham, that includes you. I know you probably haven't watched the Zac Efron starring documentary film on Netflix.
No, not yet. The Ted Bundy? Not yet.
It's good. I'll save our review for that episode. But my question here is, and I'm somebody who's been fascinated with Ted Bundy and other serial killers in the sense of the same fascination I have for mass murders like Adolf Hitler. Like, what drives somebody? I mean, if he had not flunked out of art school, would Adolf Hitler have been a mass murderer? You know, that kind of thing fascinates me. So I mean that in a purely holy, type way. So with that, I had already seen these interviews, but they actually showed, they depicted some young ladies who one of them was like, I know he's done all these awful things, but he's so dreamy. And I'm sure everybody's heard me quip with that line a number of times in this show. But there was a, I'm not sure if he was in law enforcement or a doctor, but he said, well, there definitely seems to be a sexualized component to this, not as far as the crimes, but the young women that were showing up at the first nationally broadcast trial, the Ted Bundy's, that were attracted to him. Do you think that young lady in her obsession with Devin Klebold, whatever the other hellion's name is, that they shot up Columbine, do you think there was any element of that to this? Because she was obsessed with Columbine. I mean, was there some sort of like pseudo-sexual?
Well, I mean, that's interesting because, I mean, I'm not a psychologist or anything, but...
Neither am I.
But I think the one thing that was so surprising about it was the fact that it was a female. And what component of female motivation is different from the male motivation to do this?
That's what I mean. You don't tend to see... All right, I'm sure there were some loons out there, guys that, you know, thought Casey Anthony was hot or whatever. But let's be honest here. And I know I'm stereotyping here, but stereotypes exist for a reason. Who is it that we in general hear of falling in love with serial killers, violent people?
Mm-hmm.
And that tends, by and large, to be young, albeit naive women. I'm not categorizing all women here, but let's be real. That's who that is. So,
well, I would like
for it to be a female. Yeah. Do you think there was some sort of just beyond? I don't know. It just seems to these girls, when they get obsessed with something like a Columbine, there's like a I want to mate with these evil men.
I wonder if there's, you know, I mean, I don't know who's ever done this analysis, but I wonder if there's, well, like for men, for example, it doesn't matter if that woman did the most gutless, cold, devilish thing on planet Earth, there's going to be a bunch of dudes out there. They're going to comment on whether she's hot or not. That's just the reality. Okay. Whereas I think women have a more measured approach. If it's bad, it's bad. And
but they still thought Ted Bundy was hot.
And I really don't know. Maybe a mystique to it or something.
I'm not saying that to pick on women here, but clearly the reason this comes up, I suppose this is a perfect segue, is because when I reference Colorado becoming a theater, I mean as in a combat theater, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The game, the narrative has shifted to the point where here you are, a BSN of nursing, working, you know, in more than just nursing in an ICU now. I mean, you've stepped up in a very corporate sense. I'm proud of you. Good for you. I'm a student of economics who... if we can do better financially, I maybe can be called an entrepreneur. But that's where we're at, that a BSN trained in trauma nursing and an economist, an economics student, are pontificating about the philosophy with these sorts of crimes, because that's, maybe I'm just doing a terrible job of articulating this. That's how off the rails this whole thing has got.
I was going to say, because it's where we're at currently.
It's like, I said it before on a column, there are no experts because, you know, several hundred trial lawyers haven't had a problem raping the Constitution. So do we need more lawyers in Congress? The Federal Reserve did nothing. If anything, they made it worse with the 08 financial crisis, and that's some doctors of economics. So, you know, criminologists aren't doing any better at bridging the middle ground, or creating a middle ground, because is there a middle ground?
Yeah, it's I think it's an interesting transition, because the idea of what we were going to talk about tonight was really, where is the middle ground? And
spoiler alert, we don't agree.
Yeah, spoiler alert, exactly. And
not on the middle ground part.
Yeah, exactly. My real question is, regardless of whether or not you could adequately come up, if Quantico could come up with the ideal profile of the young white male who's going to shoot up a school. You know, and they could accurately pinpoint that person prior to the shooting happening with almost 100% surety in a hypothetical world.
Yeah, most domestic terrorism, whether people want to hear this or not, is white under 40.
Yeah.
Evangelical and religious background, sorry, males.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? Like,
I call these acts domestic terrorism.
As they are.
Conservatives don't want to say that.
Yeah, as they are. Even if we could create a profile, you're still looking at potential slippery slopes in terms of the Second Amendment and in the purists, the Second Amendment rights. Because, you know, it's like anything that you do that you can apply a profile to somebody or that, you know, it's arguable and that is a potential slippery slope. But
this isn't really about profiling, though.
No, not really. It's,
when it comes down to what we feel we need to do to solve this problem.
Well, here's...
I feel we can't do.
So I'll lay an example out here that happened. It was probably 9-10 months ago, and I just happened to be on Instagram, and you know, you can follow some pretty right wing folks, pretty left wing folks, any types, but there was a specific, I don't remember what horrific event happened, but of course it spurs the Second Amendment debate, and there was a string of posts, you know, obviously pretty controversial post. And so I actually wound up getting into a messaging back and forth with this guy, and I've never really done this before, and I'm certainly not on Instagram. And you know, we were actually able to find, from what I felt like, we were able to meet some sort of consensus. And it wasn't necessarily that he agreed with what I was proposing, but that he was able to say privately, albeit, say, I see your point, and I don't, I know, and
don't do that. That's so ugly, Nate.
And that, I mean, for me, that was a bit of a win, because what you hear in the narrative today, or what you see is really the barricades and the trenches, and they're really to concede a point or to say I take your point is losing territory. And to which I think is the whole point of us doing Mod State. You could probably create an entire podcast about two people civilly talking about the Second Amendment. And
we could just have on the female commenter who somehow took our discussions into how should I phrase this? A sexual direction.
Well,
did you see that one?
I didn't see that one.
Oh, it's classic. We're both beautiful.
Noted. I'll have to go back and find it. So anyway,
I just thought you should know that.
Thank you. I'll go check it out. I'm losing my train of thought here. So
I'm sorry.
So the point being that my fear is that when you have a hotly debated topic like this, and the reality is that, you know, Denver, Colorado, you could argue is almost an epicenter of these type of domestic terrorist acts, that at some point they're, depending on what, so the sort of counterforce or the equal opposite reaction to the Second Amendment and the staunch supporters and the purists of the Second Amendment is an equal opposite reaction of abolishing the Second Amendment. That is the purest Newton law. It's that there's an opposite reaction. And the issue is that there's more variables than just the equal opposite reaction. There's a cultural opinion. There is...
That's what you're going with. You think there's more than that.
Well, what I'm saying is that there's more than just the equal opposite reaction. So the equal opposite reaction is the theory or the viewpoint.
There's more than the two extreme poles?
Well, there is, because there's a middle ground in between all of that. However, what I'm saying is that...
You really believe that?
Yeah, I mean, there's varying degrees of opinions on what we should do about gun regulation. What I'm saying is that what you have to be careful about is that the reality is that there's the Second Amendment, and that is a true thing. It's a tangible, it's an idea, it's law. the opposite reaction to that is the idea that we abolish the Second Amendment, and it's just an idea. But the problem is the more that you don't recognize the reality on the ground, that i.e. there's multiple school shootings, that you statistically have a higher probability of getting shot, what is it, like in a high school than in the line of service today, maybe not 10 years ago, but today or something like that.
Yeah.
That those statistics will add up, those realities and experiences. What's that?
It's ghastly. There's no arguing that.
Yeah.
That's not a point I'm going to attempt to make.
And even if it was just marginally safer to be in a high school than to be in the armed service, that's still ridiculous. So if you continue to add these statistics up, you continue to add these experiences up, and you continue to let this happen, that equal opposite reaction, that idea, now can become more tangible, meaning that it carries more weight, and it becomes that thing that you feared the most. That equal opposite reaction becomes a more conceivable reality. And so what I'm saying is that when you have an idea, sometimes there's a warranted, that maybe some cooperation is warranted. And it's not a cooperation to bad ideas. It's a cooperation to maybe protect your interest a little bit. And that's a whole part of democracy. Democracy is about cooperation. Democracy is about finding middle ground. Democracy isn't about revolution if you don't like the one thing that's happening. It's there. So my point is that if we can let this continue to happen, that I wouldn't discount the experiences of high schoolers, not the experience of being part of a shooting, but the experience of doing active shooter drills, the experience of living in the reality where it is more probable of that happening than it was when I was in high school. And, you know, I don't know what that's like because I didn't have to deal with that, but there's a whole population of people that do have to deal with that reality. And I wouldn't discount the experiences and the activism of those people. I mean, of those kids. And just like the reality of living with a world that they'll live longer in a world with climate change than I will.
Right. I mean, you and I used to turn the internet off when we were kids. Okay. And, you know, back then every single male walking the planet wasn't a rapist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, did you know you were a rapist?
I didn't, but.
Well, you are, you know, that's just every straight male is a rapist. You know, the world has completely changed in this time. And I don't mean that to be snarky towards it. It is an abysmal thing what has happened. And I don't offer thoughts and prayers. They're in my thoughts and they are in my prayers, but that's not an answer to this. I acknowledge that. You know, I obviously respect your opinion. I think you're a brilliant mind, and I enjoy doing this every time out, just like I enjoyed it when we met in the service 8 years ago next month. I would like to, as a pragmatic idealist, I would like for my more idealistic demons to be able to come to the fore here, angels for those of you who are sensitive to that D word, and say that there is some middle ground to be found here. I would really, really like to believe you on that. I want you to continue. But another spoiler alert, I don't think there is.
And the one thing that I would like to profess is that, you know, I don't know what that middle ground is. However, let's pretend hypothetically that what I'm saying is true.
You don't have an idea.
Well, I could propose some things. But what I'm saying is I don't know what necessarily the ultimate middle ground will be. Or if there will be
pragmatically.
One. But what I mean specifically is that let's say 15, 20 years down the road, if this statistics continue to happen, maybe at a higher frequency, or maybe even at the constant rate that it is, that there's going to be a point where a large majority of the population is not going to tolerate it anymore. And all it takes is a perfect storm of the right elected officials, the right Supreme Court to make things happen that ultimately go against, we'll just say, you know, tightening regulation on gun control to the point where It's sort of like what you would see in Georgia today with the abortion laws that are being passed in Georgia.
Let me assure you, nobody wants to see bloodshed. to any of the millennials and Generation Zeros out there, you want to see bloodshed? Go ahead and start sending DHS agents out there. I know you're not proposing this, but there's some pretty extreme minds out there that might actually be facilitated in their thinking by what you're proposing. I get it that things could get bad enough to where they go that way. There would be.
And that
doesn't even begin to describe that.
And I'm not discounting that at all. I know enough. I'm not saying enough of these people, but I know enough about that mindset that it would.
You people.
And look, I mean, that's. If you're from Detroit,
I'm from New Orleans. I mean, you and I both have our experiences with violence.
Could you argue that that's exactly what the Second Amendment was designed to do, was to protect yourself from a quote unquote tyrannical government, which you know.
Oh, I think that was the point exactly.
Exactly. So, what I think would be misguided is that
you think it needs to be less bipolar as far as the discussion from either the reason it is
so polar or hyper partisan.
I'm not saying bipolar, folks, I'm not mocking anyone.
No, what you mean is the reason it's such like a hyper partisan issue is because there is no wiggle room on the other side.
It transcends parties.
It does. And I mean hyper partisan in terms of just like the mindset. And what you run the risk of is with that sort of hyper partisan and not necessarily political parties, is that you just have a pushback on the other side that said, this is enough. This is like the fact that you are not cooperating in this means that our shared experience in the way we have to live every single day, that we're going to put a stop to it. And, you know, quite frankly, damn your feelings. And
wait, you know, what's ironic about that is I could see some rock stars, let's be honest, it'd be from the progressive wing of the Democratic Party primarily in Congress that would push for this. I'm not saying there wouldn't be any moderates on either side of the aisle to join in. But the ironic thing about that to me is, you know, ain't none of their buddies in DHS wearing flax kicking in doors to go get guns. It's going to be people like the people they want guns taken from that actually sign up for that.
You're absolutely right. It's sort of like an order that you'd get in the military. That's it's the commanding officer would tell you to go do something, and it's.
It's people that they would never associate with ever that are in the infantry and in the branch, the portion of DHS that would be involved in such a seizure. The progressives that would push for this, they wouldn't be caught dead, no pun intended, hanging out with these guys.
Well, that's true. So let's just step back from the DHS raiding homes for weapons, It to me is
one of the extremes.
Is an extreme, and probably will never happen in our lifetime, or would just even if it did, it would be an impossible task. There's a couple things. You know, there's the counter argument to look, or the argument rather to guns. Well, we need to just beef up protection, right? So we need to. Have more armed security guards. We need to arm teachers. I think Florida just passed a bill to arm teachers. And the reality is there's one, I'll just say this, and I've said it probably 100 times to people I've talked to. there's only a few people in the world that are truly trained for close quarters combat and to be firing effectively in a stressful situation in a crowd of people. They're like Delta Force, the Navy SEALs, possibly the Rangers, and maybe SWAT teams, not even local beat cops. I mean, into crowds, like in a stressful environment, even your conventional infantry units don't train like that. I'm not saying you couldn't do it.
Yeah, I wasn't trained in throngs of people, no.
But
I mean,
so, like, for the example, Pulse nightclub. Well, if the security guard had a gun, or if someone was just armed, if someone was just armed, they would have been able to subdue the shooter. Oh, you mean at 2 o'clock in the morning with 100 people in a strobe light, noisy nightclub that any random citizen is going to be effectively be able to bear down in darkness with massive amounts of people running around is going to effectively take that. I mean, you're asking for unintended
bedlam
injuries. So, that being said, a teacher in a classroom, like, oh, we'll train them. Like, train them in what? Like, what course has 25 kids running around and you're trying to fire on a shooter while you're freaking out? So it's,
So let me add the
last portion to this. So enhanced security. So we add more suits. So what do we add? Like 4 SWAT members to every high school. I mean, the reality is that this is what domestic terrorists want. They want the glory. What do you think that an armed security guard's going to stop someone from trying to rampage a school? That's the glory. I mean, it's time and time again, these people have entered schools where they knew there were armed security guards. But
I don't think that holds water any more than it does to say, well, criminals really want the opportunity to stick it to the man, so we need to disband the police.
No, I mean, I understand. But what I'm saying is if there hasn't been a lot of studies on beefed up like SWAT teams guarding high schools, and maybe a shooter wouldn't be able to get into that school or take as many lives. The reality is not going to stop that from happening. And you know, I'm equating car thefts to school shootings, I think, is sort of apples and oranges, because I think we're just talking about two crazy different situations. And I take your point, but. The reality is, I think time and time again, it's shown that these people don't care about armed security guards. And I would say, show me the last time a security guard has been effective.
I think you could stop after the first part. These people don't care. They have no regard for human life. I would argue that we need soul control in this country. That's a different podcast. Mm. If anybody is happy with the absence of God, any higher power from our culture, please raise their hands if they can do so with a straight face.
Well, you've certainly taken this podcast in a different direction.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said you've certainly taken this podcast in a different direction, but
I don't want to go that way.
But may I point out that you said that a lot of these individuals are religious fundamentals and have an evangelical background. So
that's correct, and I will stipulate that in the same way that Adolf Hitler acknowledge the validity of the Christian church in a political sense.
Noted.
I'll say that I don't think he is in a very cool in terms of temperature locale right now.
Noted. Noted.
These are individuals that, to me, I don't want to be – now, a lot of them are evangelical, but people don't even care about that. They say, all right, they're associated with the Christian church. I don't want to be associated with that as a Christian any more than, like, the two of the gentlemen that I work with who are – a law-fearing, law-abiding Muslims ought to be associated with Sharia law. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm not going to make that leap, but I'm talking about a genuine change in this country. And again, that's a different podcast. But I come down to here, where, you know, it's like somebody did a meme, and I know this is not scientific, but the song remains the same. And if we do something about making this sort of action illegal, making guns, gun control, making guns illegal, then nobody will get shot anymore. And that's how we stopped everybody from doing drugs. Mm-hmm. I know that's overly simplistic, perhaps.
Yeah. And no. I mean, it's sort of like how effective was the war on drugs. And I see your point, and I'm certainly not, I think, unfortunately, I'm making small specific, points to a huge, a broader point of like regulation versus middle ground.
We have to have this conversation.
Yeah. I realize that even if you were to take guns away completely, there's way too many in this country that you would effectively get rid of all of them and there would still be violence. The reality is, what do we do about the current situation where there is you know, even if the act of terrorism isn't violence, terrorism doesn't have to be violent. It just has to inflict some sort of emotional toll on you.
To incite fear.
Exactly. And if...
And in that sense, they're winning. Whoever they is...
Yeah.
If a bunch of minor theys, individual players, we haven't seen anything yet that I'm aware of that's connecting these individuals beyond just hatred. But they're winning.
Yeah, and I guess my middle ground, some things that I propose on the middle ground, is not necessarily more. I mean, we definitely need more role in making sure
you
that people
use the word checks a lot, and someday you've got to elaborate on that. But
what did I say in checks?
What? No. Not I'm not being flippant. You've said like remember when Nate was on before early on. Nate Olson was on. That episode specifically, you referenced, well, there needs to be more checks, background checks and whatnot.
Yeah.
And I would love to hear you elaborate on what that would look like.
Sure. So absolutely. So there's a couple things. One, I think that there needs to be in this time of increased access to information and weird rabbit holes and echo chambers, I think there just needs to be more public health education on mental health. Not mental health means you can't have a gun. But meaning just the signs to look for, places to go to report these kind of things, and
what would be some disqualifiers?
So let's talk about checks.
Aside from severe developmental retardation, we're not talking about that.
Yeah,
but what would be some disqualifiers for aside from felons?
Well, and even the felon thing is arguable, depending. But okay, so let me back up broadly before I just jump into checks completely. So and I know that this example is used a lot, but we do check a lot of things. We check, and the difference is it's a privilege versus a right. So my thing is, regardless of whether or not it's a right or a privilege, it is the right to own something that has the consequence that a firearm has. Like the firearms that I own, that I have in my home, I use for specific reason. Each one has a specific reason. And I understand the consequence of me pulling the trigger on the other end. And I think most law-abiding gun owners know the exact same thing. But I also realize that as much as it's a right, it's also a privilege because I'm an upstanding citizen. And that's I look at it as a privilege to own this kind of thing, to have the responsibility to be able to know what to do with this weapon. And
I'm not going to agree that it's a privilege, but I will stipulate that rights come with an inverse, and that is responsibilities.
Exactly. So, and what I'm saying is that what I think we don't do is we don't really stipulate the responsibility enough. And I know that most like law-abiding gun owners understand the responsibility, but I mean the broader societal responsibility.
Does our society understand the inverse of rights being responsibilities on any right?
And maybe this one's a unique one because of the consequence of the gun itself. Because of
somebody dies?
But there's not the right to liberty, right? Doesn't carry the same consequence as the right to bear arms in terms of my liberty every day.
From the founding documents, but, the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Right. That's an abstract.
Okay, so that's an abstract. So let's just say First Amendment, freedom of speech. Freedom of speech or my ability to say something might drive someone crazy or might drive them to do something crazy. But my speech itself, I think personally, and one could argue, of course, doesn't have the same direct consequence of me pulling the trigger on a weapon to the thing that's in front of that bullet or in the path of that bullet. Meaning that there is less responsibility, I think, for my personal free speech, meaning that sticks and
there's
stones
an immediate response.
Exactly. So sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Well, a bullet's going to hurt you 100% of the time. And I'm not trying to be all libtard here, but the point is there as law abiding, responsible gun owners, if you are a law abiding, responsible gun owner, then you understand that the responsibility that you have for the broader protection of everyone else or society, the responsibility that society has to one another to continue to have this right. And that means
I would love to know who are the right-minded, responsible individuals that we're going to have as leaders to come up with a way of keeping everyone else accountable.
So it comes to checks.
Where do we find those people?
So it comes to checks. So one thing that we do know is that we have, I think, more weapons in this country than there are people. We do know that there's various loopholes out there that make it fairly easy for non-responsible gun owners to get weapons. I brought that up before in terms of the gun convention loophole that allows people to go down and get weapons unchecked and bring them back.
Well, now you got 3D printers. That's exciting.
Yeah, well, we won't even get into that right now. But
you know, I don't have one.
So there's a responsibility there. The other would be, and that's something that the gun community could legislate for. And the next would be something that Australia does that I think is rather interesting.
Oh boy.
Now, look, I will say that after Port Arthur, Australia did a buyback essentially of all these weapons, and there's actually more weapons in Australia today than there were after Port Arthur. So that just goes to show that just because you have regulation in a country doesn't mean that you can't have gun ownership. And people actually willingly gave up those weapons. And now today
they have a problem though with everything non-human that's carbon, a carbon-based life form trying to kill you. Here we have gangs of children trying to hunt you down.
Or spiders that will kill you with one bite. But so when there's like little things that I would propose, like selling a weapon. So you can do a private sale. So registering your weapon is one thing that Second Amendment folks get all bent out of shape about. Like, they're going to know where my weapons are and they're going to come and take them. Well, you just made the argument that God bless the person that goes and does that. Even if you know that they're registered, good luck, right? So that's the point, right? So why are we worried about whether or not you're registered? If there is more weapons in the United States than there are people, what conventional military force is going door to door to get those weapons? Like, it just doesn't work that way. And I think there's sort of an irrationality that people have surrounding the search and seizure of weapons. I mean, that's just an insane proposition, not to mention the people that would be doing that enforcement are the same people that, newsflash, are pro Second Amendment folks.
But yeah, that's kind of what I was
earlier. This is my whole point. Like, what are y'all freaking out?
Sheriffs that are refusing to enforce new laws.
So what are y'all freaking out about? So that's a proposal. If you're going to do a private gun transaction, register your weapon. You got to go to the police station and sign it. So those guys, the only thing the cops are going to do is register your weapon and then look at it and be like, it's a nice piece. And you're going to move on.
And if it ever comes up in a crime.
Exactly. These are the other things that if your weapon gets stolen from your home, if it's not locked up appropriately, you got to tell them. Because if it comes up somewhere else and you're linked to that weapon and you didn't tell them that weapon was stolen, it's a felony. It's just accountability. And like, for example, this STEM shooter.
I'm not agreeing with you, but I definitely think this is one of the more rational series of proposals I've heard.
The rest of the world views the United States as the Wild West. It's like sub-Saharan Africa in a civil war. I mean, it is crazy. It's actually interesting to talk to people that live in Europe and live in the Commonwealth, and they're literally, the memes that they send me couldn't be more spot on, but also from them, it's more ridiculous than it is to me. And
I think they need to be worried about hard or soft Brexit and let us handle our...
They're very worried.
We left Europe for a reason.
So my point is that these are not things like if you look at the big picture, like it seems horrible. It seems like gun registration is a slippery slope. Well, yeah, it is. But what are you going to do? You're going to arm the hippies in San Francisco to go door to door to take your weapons, even if they're registered? It's preposterous. And I think what we're failing to do in the debate, what we're failing to do in the podcast debates, or just the the buddies that have different views is instead of just taking the theoretical idea of the Second Amendment or repealing the Second Amendment, abolishing the Second Amendment, that there's no reality talk. There is no like, dude, you really think they're coming door to door? Who's coming door to door to take your weapons even if you register them? Like, we're not having that conversation. And if we don't have that conversation, the ones that we're having right now, you're never going to have those moments where it's like, hey, man, I actually see your point on the whole slippery slope thing. Or, hey, man, I see your point. Like, I get why registering a handgun in a private transaction wouldn't be the worst thing. Or, you know what? Yeah, you're right. If a guy...
Oh, I do see it. It's rational. Again, I think it's one of the more rational things that I have heard from someone in favor of any semblance of gun control.
And we haven't really gotten...
I mean, we're on the spectrum, clearly.
We haven't really got into the whole mental health aspect and stuff like that, but I think we probably save this for another podcast,
right?
because ultimately,
at least the second part to this.
Ultimately, what happens is the counter argument to everything that I'm saying right now is that how is anything that you've proposed right now going to stop domestic terrorism in high schools or in churches?
Well, we both need a greater opportunity to elaborate because it would be, while again, I and more on the slippery slope side of this, and by more, I mean really. At the same time, you haven't had a fair opportunity to elaborate fully on those things. So it would be unfair at this point to just categorically say, this is the line of demarcation.
Yeah. And
I think it warrants further discussion.
Yeah, and I will say this too, and I'm going to tease this for the next part on this, is that I would say, here's where I see some interesting developments in the future. So if you remember, in 2001, 9/11, there was an inherent bias towards Arabs flying in airplanes that you couldn't, and you don't have to be bashful. You don't have to act like, I think it's just a normal response that if you got on an airplane very acutely after 9/11 happening, and there was a guy wearing a turban, whether he was Sikh, and it just sucked. You completely profiled, even though he wasn't the completely wrong religion. You went, oof. And why'd you do that? You did it because just recently, a bunch of dudes from an Arab country hijacked an airplane and killed 3,000 people. That's just the reality. And Sam Harris has talked about this, and I realize it's not a popular point to take. But it was hard. Yeah,
that's why everybody else is probably nervous about seeing a bunch of under 40 rough looking white dudes around.
So it's not it's
understandable.
It's culture. It's like, it's evolution. It's who we are, that we associate an experience we had.
It's how we act on that is relevant.
True. So there may be a point in the future where you are profiling the typical domestic terrorists, right? That the if
you and I got profiled on Canal Street, and you damn well know it.
And look,
you remember that?
I think I do.
It was like we were walking along Canal Street. You and I, you were in a tank top, and you have a half sleeve, some extensive tattoos. You know, I got scars on my face, and you know, we were just strolling along, and there was there were probably two dozen plus of a certain minority group that was on the sidewalk. Doesn't matter which one, but it was like parting the Red Sea, because there had, shock of all shocks, been a shooting around the time we launched this podcast, and it was perpetrated by white dudes. Yeah.
So it's, you know,
it just happens.
Yeah. And I don't fault anyone for feeling that way.
No.
And I'm just saying that I think
conversation stopped and people were like, oh.
So I think I'm just kind of teasing that for the next one, to get into more of the mental health aspect and the profiling aspect. And I think there's
love me for my mind, baby.
I think that there's more slippery slopes to that. The idea of red flags and family members that have immediate family members who have severe mental health issues and weapons and stuff. And I think there's more slippery slopes to that than there are just basic fundamental regulations in terms of registering firearms and closing convention loopholes and stuff like that. I feel like that's more benign than if I had a sister or a father who had a severe mental, like bipolar or depression or was saying some things online that were in line with the conversations of people who have perpetrated domestic terrorism in the past, you know, putting them on sort of red flag lists for firearms. Like, I think that is a far more slippery slope effect than anything that I've proposed tonight. And even the things that I've proposed tonight have had adamant pushback from hard Second Amendment proponents and purists. And so getting into to arguably the thing that they want the most, like the mental health, it's a mental health issue. Well, I'm going to propose and say the things that happen with mental health and surrounding mental health have, you're not going to like that. That you're going to hate that more than the things that I've just proposed. When
everyone's going to hate anything that well, is.
But what not. I, but what I mean, like, I think the point is, so checking your firearm at the police station, closing a gun convention loophole, or any of the sort of benign things that I've just proposed, don't affect any of the law-abiding gun owners, okay? But if you're a law-abiding gun owner and now your daughter has, or your son, your white 18-year-old son has a diagnosed mental health or undiagnosed mental health disease, we'll just say diagnosed for this case.
Yeah, let's say and, the undiagnosed yeah, is
and,
a very
and is, prop. And is on Facebook talking a whole bunch of shit, right? And now all of a sudden the cops are at your house going, sir, we just want to check, see if you got any firearms. You're on the red flag list. Your son's been saying some crazy stuff. He meets criteria. We need to take all the guns from your home until everything's checks out.
Like, sir, do you happen to know why your son said "see Kyle" 4,000 times in a row? And-
so that's my point. Like, that to me is scarier, and probably would
your son
actually
loving Hitler or having a gun.
Well, the people knocking on your door and your son saying "Heil Hitler," but my point is that's your solution. Like, this is what Donald Trump's been proposing. This is the proponents proposing mental health. We need better mental health checks.
You had to do it. You brought in Trump after Hitler.
That's what he's. Oh, I didn't mean that. But this is what I'm teasing, because the what they're proposing. Second Amendment purists are proposing the mental health. Well, what comes with that is it isn't just screening every person who gets a gun for mental health. It's going to be screening family members who like Johnny goes and gets diagnosed with ADHD and depression and anxiety. And now we're screening dad to see if he has a firearm and says that's what you wanted. You wanted mental health checks. And this is what you get, because what I'm proposing fixes the problem. And in terms of the domestic terrorism issue, and you're not going to like that, but that's what you're proposing. You're saying fix the mental health issue. It's a mental health issue. Well, here's how we fix the mental health issue, and you're not going to like it. You're going to wish that you could. you're going to wish that you could have just closed gun convention loopholes. You wish you could have just registered that shit at a police station.
Well, I will say I'll say this: the whole lack of transparency or any kind of administrative role at gun conventions is absurd. How that's legal?
I
don't know.
I don't know either. It's I mean,
to me, that's not an extension of your Second Amendment rights to be able to. I mean, we want all this crackdown on who's who coming across the border, and I'm not saying that's not a good idea, but yet, I mean, honestly, if they looked old enough and had some facial hair, an 11-year-old could probably walk into a gun convention and not even have an ID and walk out with a weapon.
You know,
I've seen some crazy sting videos from those.
Oh, dude. And when we do our next part on this,
I'm in your corner on that one.
I will say, I'll try to find the Vice documentary they did on that. I know Vice leans left, but you can't deny the footage. I mean,
who it is. I'm in your corner on the gun conventions deal. Well,
but that fixes the inner city issue, and that's a whole other thing. So we'll get more into that. But hey, look, we're almost at 50 minutes. We've been burning the midnight oil, if you will.
You
so
just keep teasing.
I know. That's my. You got me all hot and bothered. God, you do that.
Man, now we're gonna have to listen to the last episode and review, European bathhouse.